Welcome to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Until the mid-1990s, the harvesting of redwood trees was the industry that dominated the economy of the north coast of California. In the mid-1990s, due to circumstances involving the Pacific Lumber Company and Charles Hurwitz of Texas, industry advocates and environmentalists clashed over the need for and the extent of the redwood tree harvest. At that time, few environmentalists carried as much name recognition and power as did Judy Berry. In this program, originally recorded in March of 1995 at the heart of the conflict, Judy Berry and I discussed the position of Earth First in relationship to the logging rules. Judy, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you for having me, Barry.
I'm glad you're here, and I'm sorry that we weren't going to have a lively discussion between you and John Campbell. I think that it would be an interesting talk, but let's get to the issues. John Campbell confirmed yesterday that the position of Pacific Lumber is that they own the trees, and they should be able to sell them if they want, because they're theirs. You want to buy them? We'll sell them to you. And your response is?
Well, actually, there's several responses to that. First of all, the issue of should this be cut at all. And Charles Hurwitz's claim for ownership, which is, I'll talk about that in a little while, how dubious that is, how he obtained these trees in the first place. But all of that aside, the issue isn't should we cut old growth. The issue isn't should we cut a wilderness area. The issue, 96% of the old growth has already been cut. The issue is, should we cut the last 4%? And the answer is absolutely no. The trees in Headwaters Forest are 1,000, 1,500, some even 2,000 years old. And if you think of the scale of that to Charles Hurwitz's very dubious claim of ownership, if you think of the importance, the biological importance of this last island of intact redwood wilderness compared to the claim of this greedy billionaire, it absolutely pales by comparison. So biologically, Headwaters is one of three remaining murrelet habitat areas, an area that's intact enough to still exhibit enough characteristics of a redwood wilderness to be able to support murrelet. It's one of three murrelet areas on the whole California coast, which used to, the murrelet used to range completely up and down the coast the whole way. So we're talking about a last remnant of something that's already, that's almost gone. And I think the private property rights claim absolutely pales in comparison to that.
Well, let's put this into perspective as to what was here of this kind of forest 200 or 300 years ago.
Well, 140 years ago, there were 2 million acres of old growth forest. In fact, Mendocino County was the heart of this ecosystem, and we certainly know what's left here, which is nearly nothing. Of all of that 2 million acres, one half of it has been paved over, farmed over, converted to other uses, never to grow redwoods again. Much of the rest of it is these devastated stump lands, like are owned by LP and GP, and often a lot of it by Maxam now, too, now that they've increased their cutting policies. So this is a precious remnant. There's very little like this left anywhere. And, you know, these are, these biological islands, these are the Noah's Arks of the future. This is where the genetic code is carried. This is where the ecosystem, the way that it interacts and works. We've only been doing this for 140 years, cutting these trees down. And this ecosystem dates back to the days of the dinosaurs. And I think we have an absolute obligation to save everything that's left, especially something of the nature of Headwaters Forest.
You talk about a dubious claim on the part of Maxam and Pacific Lumber. Why do you characterize it that way?
Well, you know, what he did, this is this corporate raider from Texas, and he actually obtained this land through fraud and influence peddling. And he worked with Michael Milken, who was convicted of crimes very similar to those that Charles Hurwitz got away with. So the way that he did this is, first of all, Maxam is not a lumber company. It's a holding company. It's a corporate rating company that takes over other companies. So what Maxam did in the 1980s was they had a savings and loan in Texas, which they crashed in the savings and loan scandal. And the way that they crashed the savings and loan was that they invested all these people's money, these, you know, people, just innocent property owners who used this bank, they invested the public's money in Michael Milken's junk bonds. And when Michael Milken's junk bonds fell through, Michael Milken went to jail, and the savings and loan collapsed. And it collapsed to the tune of $1.6 billion. We, the taxpayers, bailed Charles Hurwitz out for that. There's something called Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and that is a public agency that guarantees banks so that we won't have another bank failure like in the Depression. So when this SNL failed, the public had to come in and bail them out. And in addition to that, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation right now claims, in addition to the $1.6 billion buyout, which they're just letting him get away with scot-free, yet they have an outstanding claim against Charles Hurwitz for $540 million at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is, they claim, his share relating from his fraud in the collapse of the SNL. So there's already a public claim of $540 million against this man, and yet he's demanding $500 million for Headwaters Forest. So in that way, so the SNL scam in itself, again, I guess I need to say why this relates to Maxam, because this is not a separate business deal. After this savings and loan had crashed, Charles Hurwitz then set his sights on Pacific Lumber Company, which is a locally owned company that had practiced somewhat sustainable logging and therefore owned the best of what was left in the world and in the redwoods. So when Charles Hurwitz took over Pacific Lumber, it was in what's called a leveraged buyout or a junk bond buyout, and now is where he called back his favor from Michael Milken. So these two deals are very closely related. In response for him buying Michael Milken's junk bonds, now Michael Milken bought his junk bonds to take over Pacific Lumber. So this is a direct involvement. Also, Ivan Boesky, Drexel Burnin, and a who's who of corporate criminals did this deal. The price, the selling price of Pacific Lumber was $900 million when he took it over, undervalued, but that was what the price is. He put up only $150 million of that, and the other $750 million was financed through Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky's junk bonds. So he took over this company with a huge debt. And
the company that he took over is Pacific Lumber.
That's right.
Okay.
I don't want
to lose the theme here.
Okay, I'm sorry. He took over Pacific Lumber carrying this huge debt of $750 million. Now, the idea of a junk bond buyout is that you buy a company that you don't really have the money to buy it, but you're going to get the money by liquidating the assets of that company that you're taking over. And so this is a very dubious scheme to start with. Well, the assets of this company happen to be the last of the old-growth redwoods. So when Charles Hurwitz came in, he certainly took it over, and he began liquidating the assets. Not only did he nearly triple the cut of old-growth redwood and institute clear-cutting and other non-sustainable methods, he also sold off the welding division, the office building. He liquidated the pension fund, and in 7 or 8 years' time, he took out of Pacific Lumber approximately $900 million worth of value between the trees that he cut and the parts of the company that he sold out off. So that's the whole price of the company. But, so now you would have thought he could have paid back his junk bonds and things would be over. But Charles Hurwitz didn't use that money that he took out of Pacific Lumber to pay the junk bonds. Instead, he used it to buy Kaiser Aluminum. So when the junk bonds became due about a year ago, he still hadn't paid them. He still owed over $500 million on the $750 million debt. So what he did at that point was the slimiest piece of this at all. Instead of paying this debt, he refinanced the company, Pacific Lumber, by splitting it into three separate companies, Scotia Pacific, Pacific Lumber, and then a new one called Salmon Creek Company. And he divided the debt among the three companies. Well, Scotia Pacific consists of the vast majority of the cutover land. That got the most debt. Pacific Lumber consists of the mill, the town, and all of the old growth except for Headwaters Forest. That got the rest of the debt. And Headwaters Forest, which he calls Salmon Creek Company, he left absolutely zero debt on. So Charles Hurwitz owns the deed to Headwaters Forest outright with no debt on it. And if he sells this land, he's going to pocket the money. He's not going to put any of it towards his massive debt. And he obtained this without paying a penny and through an absolute financial shell game of fraud. So I think it is the ultimate chutzpah for this man to come in and ask for public money, holding these ancient trees hostage, demanding public money, this Texas corporate raider, to come into California and hold the trees hostage and demand California public money or California public lands in trade for not cutting a forest that he obtained by fraud in the first place. So I think that the discussions with him and Pete Wilson are very outrageous. Pete Wilson could stop the cutting in Headwaters just by enforcing the existing forestry laws, that they're even thinking of giving this criminal our public money and our public land for land that he stole is really an outrage.
Well, the cutting that we're talking about, that's of dead and dying trees, is that right?
Well, so they say.
Right. And what does it take to do that?
It makes it even more ridiculous. The cutting of Headwaters Forest, he didn't even file a timber harvest plan. Had they filed a timber harvest plan, we would have had some reasonable amount of notice of this cutting. As it is, we've had to mobilize so quickly that it's been quite amazing. We've had about 1 week notice of this.
Well, let's back up for a minute in terms of the dead and dying cut that they're supposed to be marking tomorrow out on the ground. According to the plan, according to the law, what does that allow for? And because my next question is going to be, what do you anticipate? And maybe we'll talk soon to find out what in fact happened.
Okay.
What does that allow for?
Okay, well, this exemption, this exemption process, what it does is exempts you from the from having to file a timber harvest plan, and it exempts you from following most environmental laws. And this loophole in the Forest Practices Act was actually put into effect to deal with the effects of beetle infestations and forest fires, neither of which affect old-growth redwood. So, and it's called salvage logging. And the application of a term like salvage logging to an old-growth wilderness is really just bold-faced fraud. And the fact that the California Department of Forestry approved it just shows how they're just under timber industry's thumb, because this is a fraud to use this. What it allows is it allows them to cut up to 10% of the quote-unquote, up to 10% of the standing trees, of all the standing trees.
Regardless of whether
they are dead or dying. Well, and
regardless of whether they're dead or dying?
Well, first of all, any old tree can be described as dead or dying. I mean, these trees, and dead and dying trees, quote-unquote, are an essential part of an old-growth ecosystem. So, I mean, you know, the ferns on the ground in this place are 6 feet tall. There are, you know, the ground is a spongy loam, untouched. They're also allowed to take out as much already down trees, as they want. Even removing already down trees would desecrate this area. It would upset the balance of this last precious piece of this ecosystem. It took thousands and thousands of years for the soil to develop, you know, for these trees to develop, for this interacting ecosystem, and to go in under the guise of salvage to remove dead and dying trees, supposedly to improve the health of the stand. This is just so flagrant. It's such an in-your-face abuse of the law that it's incredible that they're getting away with this.
Judy, I want to take a moment and tell our listeners that you're listening to Radio Curious. My guest this week is Judy Berry from Earth First, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we had planned to have John Campbell, the president of Pacific Lumber, be part of this discussion, but he canceled just a few minutes before we were to record.
And good for him that he did, I'm sure. I mean, he certainly doesn't have a leg to stand on. I think he's a wimp for not coming on, but I can see why he didn't, because how can he possibly explain what he's doing? There is no excuse for it except unmitigated greed and criminality.
Judy, tomorrow there's supposed to be a marking out at the Headwaters Forest of the trees that are going to be taken. And I understand you will be nearby. What do you plan? What's anticipated?
Well, there's two things that are going to go on tomorrow. There is a public rally, which is at the log gate in near Carlotta on Fisher Road, which is off Highway 36. And this public rally is an expression of community outrage that they would dare to do this. And it's for everybody. It's for children and, you know, old people and families and anybody who wants to come. It's a legal rally to express our outrage. But in addition to that, there will also be people in the woods attempting to physically block them. It's not just that there's a marking of the trees. Actually, it's worse than that. The trees have already been marked. What's happening tomorrow is the California Department of Forestry is going in and doing a final inspection. And as soon as that inspection is done, they can start cutting. So there will people are prepared to throw themselves in front of the chainsaws, as they have before in this area. People are prepared to block their entrance in any way possible. So in the woods, there will be direct action in attempt to block it, nonviolent direct action, but attempt to block their entrance. And then at the gate, there will be a, it looks like, a very large rally expressing public outrage. At the rally, there will be speakers from the various groups that have been working to save this forest. There'll be music, things like that. And at the end of the rally, John Campbell has said that only 50 or 60 people care about Headwaters Forest, that we just make a lot of noise. At the end of the rally, we are going to caravan to Scotia and present John Campbell with 12,000 signatures of people who are demanding a moratorium on the cutting in Headwaters Forest.
How long do you anticipate it may take to do this so-called salvage cutting within the Headwaters Forest?
Well, I don't know how long it will take. All they need to do is go in. You know, the ground is very saturated now, and they can't really bring in their heavy equipment. All they have to do is go in and start dropping trees. And, you know, even if Charles Hurwitz's ultimate intent is to sell Headwaters Forest, which I certainly think it is, or he wouldn't have separated it off into a separate company with no debt on it, even if his ultimate intent is to sell it, he's certainly not above dropping trees to create a panic and force a sale. So we intend to stop that. We have no idea how long. There's a four-day window from March 28th, which is Tuesday, until the Maxim has agreed to a voluntary moratorium. It has no weight of law, and this company doesn't care about anything. But a voluntary moratorium from April 1st until September 30th, so that the murrelet can complete their nesting season before he slaughters their habitat. So we're presuming that there's a four-day unprotected period, and people are prepared to be up there the whole time. EPIC, by the way, though, is
tell us what
trying to get
Judy,
a court order.
Judy, tell us what EPIC is, and back up there for a minute, because
okay.
I think we're both talking at the same time.
All right. EPIC is the Environmental Protection Information Center, and EPIC has been filing lawsuits trying to stop Maxim's cutting in various parts of the old growth for years and years and years. They've won 8 lawsuits against Maxim on the issues of cutting old growth, including a very strong decision that they just got a week before they announced this Headwaters Grove. They just won a very strong decision in federal court stopping logging in Owl Creek, which is the second largest grove. And so EPIC has a long history of suing and winning against Maxim. EPIC is co-sponsoring this demonstration. This demonstration, by the way, is not just sponsored by Earth First. It's sponsored by Earth First, EPIC, Student Environmental Action Coalition from up at Humboldt State, and by many individuals in the community who are not affiliated with any group. This is a community mobilization, and it's actually been very impressive how passionately people feel about this and how quick people are mobilizing to come in and defend these trees.
Judy, I know you have something to say about the marbled murrelet decision from the Ninth Circuit recently and how that fits into all of this.
Well, yeah, and that was what I just referred to. That's the EPIC lawsuit that was just won in federal court about the marble murrelet. And what they ruled in this decision, so I think that besides everything else, add to everything else about this, how horrible it is what they're doing, this is a spite cut. That as soon, when they won this ruling, this was like 2 weeks ago, what the federal court said was that they said that Pacific Lumber had not only did they have inadequate murrelet studies, but they said that their studies, they ruled, the federal court ruled that their studies were absolutely and deliberately fraudulent. That what they did was they deliberately They drive the Murrelets away with heavy equipment noise, and then they do their survey. There was one that they did in 100% fog cover where they couldn't see anything. They pressured the wildlife biologist, one of whom testified to being threatened with being fired if they found too many Murrelets. They cited in this lawsuit decision, the federal judge cited this company's, he scolded them for their absolute disdain for the law. He cited a party that they had in which they threw, including John Campbell, our missing guest, they threw darts at a dartboard of a marbled Murrelet.
Now, let's back up. But you're saying that you're quoting or paraphrasing what was in the Ninth Circuit Court decision.
Absolutely. These things were cited in the decision, not just argued in the case, including the thing of the, about the dartboard and the fraud, et cetera. So what the court ruled was that their studies were fraudulent and that this area is so sensitive that any logging in this old-growth complex of headwaters, this larger one, the one that they tried to preserve in the bill, any logging in this area would constitute a take, would constitute a killing of an endangered species, of the marbled Murrelet. And what, it was a very significant ruling because it ruled that on private land, the destruction of the habitat of an endangered species does constitute a killing of that species and is therefore illegal. So this court ruling from the federal court shut down all logging in old growth areas. That's what it should be, its intent. Instead, Maxam went to the state where they knew they had more control, and they're blitzing in here with this exemption to go for the heart of the old growth in a spite cut, which is just amazing. I need to say one more thing about the exemption, though. The exemption that they've applied for and received to cut in Headwaters Grove, this is an exemption on 6,000 acres. But when there was a bill in Congress that I just referred to try to save Headwaters, it wasn't just the 6,000 acres. It was a 44,000-acre complex that consists of the five remaining. There's only five. The five remaining old-growth groves plus the connecting lands, which were to be restored, was the nature of the bill. So Owl Creek is one of these five old-growth groves, and Headwaters is another one. In addition to the 6,000-acre exemption, Maxam also has recently received a 179,000-acre exemption, and that covers virtually the rest of their timberland. And so they have the same exemption to cut, quote-unquote, dead and dying trees on virtually the whole rest of their timberland, and this happened with no public notice. It was in place a month before anybody even found out about it from our side, and they've been operating under this exemption right now. They're doing this right now. They're in there. They're taken out. People who have been monitoring them have discovered perfectly healthy stumps taken out under the pretext that they were dead or dying. They've discovered things taken out in stream zones. So even the minor regulations that modify an exemption cut have been flaunted as usual by Maxam. But even if they shut down the cutting on the 6,000 acres, they are still exemption cutting old growth, quote-unquote salvage logging of old growth, throughout their timberlands, throughout the 44,000-acre complex.
Judy, we have about 2.5 minutes left, and before we conclude, I want to shift topics with you and get a status report on the litigation that you have going against the FBI.
Okay, well, we're still in what's called the discovery phase.
That's where you ask questions of them at depositions, and they have to provide written answers to written questions.
And also face-to-face. You know, we also do it face-to-face, and it has the weight of court testimony. It's all written down by a court reporter. And we've been discovering quite a lot of amazing things in the course of this. What's most recently happened in this case is that Richard Held, the man in charge of the FBI, who is a longtime COINTELPRO operative under J. Edgar Hoover, engaging in J. Edgar Hoover-type political sabotage campaigns, he actually filed a motion to protect himself from our questioning, saying that we shouldn't be allowed to protect himself. And he lost, and we won, and so we are now going to get to question Richard Held under oath. And
when do you plan to be able to do that?
I'm sorry, what?
When do you expect to be able to do that?
We'll be within a few months. So that's the most recent thing. The other thing that happened in the same court hearing, which is very recent, is that the FBI, in the course of this discovery that we've been having in these interviews, they came up with an excuse where they claimed that they had a tip on the day that I was bombed that the heavy hitters from up north and Earth First were going to be transporting a bomb. And we claim from other things in the files and from other testimony, we claim that this is a false tip, that the FBI made it up after the fact to justify the false arrest. And so we demanded that they tell us the name of the informant so that we can question them to find out whether it's a false tip. And they very rarely will allow that to happen. It's called piercing the informant privilege. But we won that ruling also. The judge said it's not enough that you suspect that it's a false informant, that this is a fake tip. You have to have substantial evidence. And she ruled that we did have substantial evidence, so they are also being forced to reveal the name of this informant.
And when do you expect to learn that?
Again, it's within a couple months. I'd like to say one more thing about Headwaters, if I can.
Yeah, sure.
I want to say that Headwaters Forest is a planetary treasure, and this is just the fact that he's trying to cut this is an absolute travesty, that we're not just talking about scenery here. Charles Hurwitz is ripping out the lungs of the planet, and there, these trees are an ancient wilderness. The idea of it going down just to satiate the greed of this billionaire is really a travesty. We certainly need marbled murrelets more than we need corporate raiders in this land, and Hurwitz should be given no compensation at all. He should be forced to give up this land. Debt for nature would be a good deal for this man. He belongs in jail. Hurwitz does not deserve compensation. He owes restitution. He owes restitution to the community that he's destroyed the economic base. He owes restitution to the taxpayers that he forced to bail him out of his junk bond adventures, and he owes restitution to the earth. And that's why we're going to be up there.
Judy, I want to thank you for joining us and ask you the last question I've asked you before here on this program, and that is, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately that you can recommend to our listeners?
Well, I have to say that for the last week and a half, I haven't read anything because I've been working so hard on this mobilization, but the book that I put down before I stopped having time to read when we started doing this was it's called J. Edgar Hoover. It's by Kurt Gentry. I'm doing this to study for the FBI case, but it's turned out to be an extremely interesting book that I thought I knew everything there was to know about the way these people operate and how deliberate their actions are. But this book has been it's easy reading, it's interesting, and it's quite informative.
And that's J. Edgar Hoover by Kurt Gentry.
Yes.
Judy Berry, thank you very much for joining us here on Radio Curious.
Thanks for having me. Sorry that wimpo John Campbell wouldn't come on.
All right. Right after we recorded this program and while I was preparing it for broadcast, Judy Berry called me back to tell me that she had learned that this morning, March 27th, the logging had already begun at Headwaters Forest.
Judy Berry was one of the leading environmental advocates in Northern California until her death in March of 1997. The book that she recommended is J. Edgar Hoover by Kurt Gentry. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. You've been listening to the archives of Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.